today on Rockin' the Suburb.
My brain's still scrambled from the experience.
Hey everybody, it's Patrick here. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to Rockin' the Suburbs. And we have a special pair of guests today in honor of Ozzy Osbourne's recent passing. Rest in power, Ozzy. Two voices I'm sure you will recognize. It's Brittany and Hans Reese from Frank Muffin. Hey guys, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey Patrick, great to see you, hear you, depending on, you know, how people are adjusting this, I guess.
And yeah, it's great to see you, man.
That's right.
Thanks for having us.
How is everything with you guys? Yeah, absolutely. How's everything with you guys? Are you doing well?
Yeah, doing well. Exhausted as always, so it means we're busy.
It's self-inflicted, so we can't really complain, but yeah, it's great. We're gearing up for a lot of fun up ahead, and this weekend at Suburbs Fest.
Yes, and I will tell everybody we are recording this about 4 to 5 days before Suburbs Fest, so I'm sure you'll hear more about and from the Muffins as we go on, as always we do at Suburbs Fest. Such an important part, and we're so thankful to have those guys. But today we're going to talk about something else, and this, what you guys undertook, would have been incredibly epic on its own, no matter what. But as fate would have it, you know, something occurred not long after the event that, you know, made it even more remarkable. So you guys were actually in attendance at Ozzy Osbourne's farewell show at Villa Park in Birmingham, England.
Yes.
That's amazing. So start from the beginning. What was the initial motivation when
at the beginning?
You guys decided to make this trip?
Well, back in 1968. Back.
I think the motivation is probably clear, but I mean, a little back story-ish is, you know, I never got a chance to see Tom Petty. I know that seems like a strange thing to say, but, you know, it's, I last show or tour he was on, I was like, lawn seats are more expensive than I wanted to pay for. I'll catch him next time. And then there wasn't a next time. So kind of after that, I started just adopting the mentality. It's just like, if you think, should I go to the show? The answer is yes. And so as you've known from previous conversations, we've traveled long and far to see shows before. And as soon as this was announced, I mean, to be completely forthcoming, I have not listened to Sabbath or Ozzy in a number of years on the regular, you know, and it was just, but they were really big in my childhood.
Formative years.
And so when I heard this was happening, I'm like, if I can get tickets, we are going to figure out how to go. And it was one of those things that I got up at probably 4 a.m, got onto Ticketmaster UK, you know, for the first pre-sale. I am fighting every Reddit thread and everything, trying to figure out how to get a pre-sale code to get in here. And finally, one Metallica fan said something about you can get in through Metallica's website. And so I shot over there, and I got right into the queue. And I'm just like, holy crap, I'm in here. And I'm just like, so you can only buy 2 tickets, so I did. And I didn't even tell Brittany for about 3 days.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. No, we had already planned the first part of it. Like, I already knew that if we could get tickets, we were going to find a way to go. I was on board to that point. But I didn't remember which day the pre-sales were starting at versus any other opportunities to try to buy. So it didn't register to me that he, because I was just letting him handle it. And next thing I know, I was like, oh, man. Did we miss it? And he's like, I got you, girl.
Oh, man. I mean, I needed somebody to book the flights and stuff. So
yeah. So little Miss Travel Agent swooped in and We made it happen. So we've had tickets since February of this year.
Wow.
I don't know, what, early, mid-February they went on sale?
I mean, I didn't tell anybody because I also hate to say I wasn't sure it was going to happen. And I didn't want people to be telling me, you didn't get to go. I didn't want to have to deal with it. So I'm like, I'm not saying a word until we get back.
We didn't tell hardly anybody. I mean, we told my dad because I felt a little funny leaving the country without somebody in our family knowing. You didn't even tell your kids.
No.
I think in a drunk moment or two, we maybe have told two friends prior to going. So it was.
And you had to tell the dog.
That was part of it.
He had to go somewhere.
But if nothing else. The other reason was because we just were tickled as could be with the idea of scooting out for a long holiday weekend. Everybody else is here celebrating America, and we're just back in the UK. Nobody knows we're gone. We show up back at work Monday morning, right as rain, and they're like, what did you do for the 4th?
Well,
let me tell you that.
Now, you guys were in the UK, was it last year? I know you were in Scotland at one point.
We were in the UK last fall. We actually spent about a week in Wales. Because Hans's dad grew up in the south, southern Wales.
Yeah.
And so we spent a week there really close to and drove by the house that he'd grown up in and stayed in the nearby city to that area and just had a lovely time.
Cool.
Just sightseeing and stuff. But we were there because we also spent 4 days in London, including seeing David Gilmour at the Royal Albert Hall. So that is another example of what we will do. Yeah.
Buy the tickets.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, this was no ordinary concert, though, right? I mean, this was
I'd like to have a seat at a 10-hour show.
All day, it seems like, affair, right?
10 hours.
At a football stadium. Yeah, 10 hours at a football stadium. That's amazing. So this is a football stadium mainly, but so they looked like, from the photos, they had sort of the stage at one end, but still, I mean, we're talking 40,000 people, probably.
40,000,
right?
I believe.
Like that. I'll let Brittany cover this.
And so, where were you guys sitting?
We were at the far end, just off to one side of the far end, but pretty low, so we could see easily over everybody that was on the floor. And we're old enough; we really appreciated a seat.
Yeah, I'd like to have a seat at a 10-hour show.
But you know, even if we were standing more. It's just to be able to both scoot out, get a drink, you know, hit the loo, come back and not worry about our spot being gone. That's just as much of a luxury as I need.
Yeah.
And it worked.
So did you guys fly in the day before and then go to the show, or what was your
that's
basic itinerary?
That's right? It was epic.
Because we had planned for it to be very much a whirlwind trip, we were originally not going to take off any time at work at all. We were going to leave just Thursday night, arrive Friday morning, be able to hang out around Birmingham City during the day, and then go to the show all day Saturday. Fly home Sunday. That was it. By the time we got flights that we could book and find the schedules, we had to take off Thursday to leave just a little bit earlier in the day and drive, get up to the airport in time. So that wasn't a huge deal. Nobody asked any questions that would make us have to reveal our big plans. But we found out about a week before the flights. We were like doing all of our final preparations, making sure our apps are up to dates, you know, everything's in hand, ready to go. And we log into one of the airline apps and it says, just 7 days till your trip to Dublin.
Oh, no.
And we're like,
no. Oh, no.
Well, we have a layover in Dublin. That wasn't really a surprise, but what? Where's the rest of it? And it wasn't there. Our return flights were there.
Oh, my gosh.
But not the connecting flight from Dublin to Birmingham. So I'm on the phone. I'm on like chats with the. Nope, they canceled it. They didn't tell us either.
Oh, my God.
So we had no idea. It was only by the coincidence that Hans was loading up and updating those apps that we even found out. So we are with a week to spare. And I'm going online and looking at every single option I can think of. Well, if we're already there, at least we're across the ocean. Now what? So we were able to get the first in the morning that, you know, available right after our flight, ferry from Dublin over to Wales.
Wow.
So, and I kind of wanted to do the ferry to travel at some point, but that's more of a when you're not on a time crunch kind of thing, or should have been. But instead it was, no, it was emergency backup and we just had to do it. So we took the ferry over and it was honestly kind of lovely. It's much more comfortable than an airplane. But
yeah,
it just, but it was 3.5 hours, and that only got us to Wales.
Yeah, wow. So that got us to the northwest corner of Wales. We were in Holyhead, and then we took another. It took us two different trains. We had to switch trains in Shrewsbury, but we got to ride through and see all of the North Welsh countryside. We'd never been up in that region before,
wow.
I think we were originally scheduled. If the flight had happened, we would have landed in Birmingham International at about, you know, a little before 9 a.m. Because of the added length of the ferry and a couple of trains and waiting for them to depart and all of that other fun stuff, we didn't get to Birmingham Central until about 4:45 in the evening.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, but it was the day before, so we still had that evening to wander around, see some of the public art that was on display, murals all over, and the first venue they'd ever played at, The Crown. We got to get photos of that.
Wow,
and,
so cool.
There was a big sculpture. I'm not sure how they would describe it, but it was made out of like maybe, I don't know if it was scrap or like industrial just engine metal, parts and like metal. So it was very neat. But, you know, Birmingham, I'm sure it's very rooted, like a lot of city, you know, industrial roots and everything. So that was fitting.
Yeah.
And as near as I could tell, the bull is the city mascot. And so they had a massive, like 2 or 3 story tall bull that they named Ozzy that they had on display at the Central Station. It was really cool to see. I've got some photos
That's
of that. And then we caught some live music. Local live music the night before the show, which was, you know, when you're in a different, Hans is already laughing, so we'll get there. When you're in a new city that you've never really been at, finding live music and knowing what to expect is not always easy. We didn't even have any buddies there that would have been able to guide us to a good show. But, you know, we're on our phones. We're trying to look for a place. A few places that we popped into to get some food were pretty packed because everything in the square was like all of the metalheads are running around.
There's 40,000 metalheads roaming around Birmingham. So
I would imagine.
But in our wandering, we found an Irish pub just, you know, a block out of the way. So just slightly less in the busy zone. And it said that they had live music every weekend. So we're like thinking, this is cool. This is great. We'll walk in. The place was almost empty. So we're thinking, this is interesting, but what's the live music? Cause we didn't see, we saw a stage, we saw some speakers, but we didn't see any instruments. And we quickly found out.
Yes. It was a UB40 tribute act.
Oh,
and as it would turn out, it was a guy. It was
one guy.
It was not a band.
And it was basically, he was karaokeing to, I think, tracks that he might have recorded himself. I'll give him possibly the credit there, but I don't know for sure. And it was an interesting, it was an interesting night. We were very much getting a kick out of watching some of the local Mom's Night Out that was just having a ball, enjoying all of that. And I had no idea how many UB40 songs there were.
Yeah, but a few pints of Guinness down, it was okay. We made it work.
It got better.
Yeah, we kind of threw things for a musical 180 genre flip for the following day, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I don't think I've ever seen a one-man tribute act to a group, especially a reggae group.
Yes.
But that makes sense because I believe, unless I missed my guess, UB40 are from Birmingham,
right? They're huge.
That would make a lot more sense. I did not realize that. Yeah. That would make some sense.
I believe they came from the heartland of England.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I give you credit for sticking out.
It's an unforgettable part of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. So what time did the show start? It must have started,
The music kicked off about 1 p.m., But we got there quite early because we wanted to make sure we could figure out where, you know, we didn't even know where we were walking to from the train station or any of that. So it took a while to get everything sorted, and we got there. It was quite a breeze. We got there about 10:30. They had just massive like open sections inside the gates, but prior to going into the actual venue.
Ah,
so they could get people through ticketing and security, check bags if needed, and, you know, slap a little, you know, like a wristband thing. They put it around my bag so that anybody who saw me later would know it had been checked. And then they just had food trucks, and you could just go get some chips and a pint or whatever, you know, while we're just hanging out. They had pallets of water. They were just giving away water for people because they didn't want to overheat in the horrific 73 degree temperatures that we were experiencing.
Everybody's complaining about how hot it is.
So that area filled up quite quickly with just a lot of people hanging out, but we were never cramped and crowded because they had gates all the way around the venue, different entrances for people. Now, I do think it was considerably worse for the people going into the GA infield section because we walked past those lines first, and as early as 10:30, it was just massive lines of people queued up to go. And we basically, when we got around to our side of the building to get in, we just, as we walked up toward the gate, I was just waiting for one person to finish getting checked before I could hand them my ticket. Yeah, it was that swift to get through. And then when they opened up the doors, they didn't make a huge announcement. We just saw a few people moving, so we just got right behind them and walked straight into our seats. It was the fastest concert entry I've ever had in my life. And I had a beer before I got in.
So this lineup is incredible when you look at it. I mean, I was looking at it earlier. The lineup that they put together for this show is really, really incredible.
Yeah.
Was there anything you guys were looking forward to other than, you know, Ozzy at the top of the bill or that surprised you when it actually happened?
I mean, the super group surprised me, even though I knew they were a thing. We didn't really know what to expect there. I mean, the beginning of the show, I was more familiar by name than by a lot of their music. Like, I know, you know, Mastodon, Rival Sons, I've seen Anthrax a few times, but I didn't know what to expect. And they were fine. You know, it was like one of those things that I was just like, yeah, they were great. But probably when Alice in Chains was the first that was like knocked my socks off, I think. Like their performance was really, really great. Because like everybody did a Sabbath cover or an Ozzy cover, you know, as they went, which was fun.
Right.
Just to see what people were going to do. And people were doing some, I don't want to say obscure ones, but kind of obscure ones initially, you know. And then when Alice in Chains gets up and they did Fairies Wear Boots, I'm like, okay, I'm listening. And they just nailed it. You know, it was just like, that was awesome. But then I'd say like that the super groups, even though they were kind of campy sometimes, I think it was great. You know, it's like Billy Corgan doing Breaking the Law with KK Downing and seeing KK and
Rudy.
Tom Morello doing the whole like metal chug thing. I was just like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And did Billy Corgan sound like Rob Halford? Hell no. Nobody sounds like Rob Halford.
But
he was having a blast. You could tell he was having the most fun.
I don't think I've ever seen Billy Corgan look like he was having fun.
Yeah, I know.
On stage. He really, really genuinely was like just enjoying the hell out of it.
And then, you know, as we go even deeper into the second supergroup.
That was the second supergroup.
Was that the second one?
Yeah, the first one had, you didn't talk much about Lizzie Hale.
I'm jumping all over the place. I forgot, Lizzie Hale. And when Jakey Lee was on stage for the first supergroup, which was really cool to see him back and around, especially after the Vegas shooting thing. And I was like, I didn't see him, but a lot of people were just running into him in the streets in Birmingham. And he was just taking pictures of people and everything. It was really, very humble, I think. But
And that first supergroup set was when Youngblood came out at the end.
Oh, yes.
And did.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was the last performance of the first supergroup section. And I'm not super familiar with his stuff, but he's one of the artists I've seen kind of people talking about nonstop. Mostly positive things. You get a few people who are like, I don't care about young musicians. But I think that's the wrong attitude to take. I thought he nailed it. I think that there's a whole lot of massive mutual respect that he and Ozzy shared when they, because they had become friends over a handful of years leading up to this. And so I already had a small feeling that he's got to be there. He's got to do something. And but he was never announced. He wasn't on any of the publicized lineups or any of the lists that said, you know, because there were a few bands that were named and then it just said and more. So there were definitely some surprises. And he was one of them that was not listed. I think that plan only came together a few days prior to the event for him to do it.
Yeah, I already forgot about that. Wow. Blur, but yeah, that was that moment, I think, when you first were looking around and saw people like awestruck. There was like, what is it? Was like, I mean, it seems maybe a little cliche to compare it to Freddie Mercury at Live Aid, but that's what it felt like.
Right.
And it was just, oh, wow. Not that I was at Live Aid, but but if I were.
No, but being in a crowd that large and knowing everybody's milling around, everybody's talking, some people are really into the music, other people are just into the overall experience, and then that song comes on and the crowd was just waiting for every note to come out.
Yeah.
It was
it's one of those moments. I mean, I almost still get chills thinking about it. It was pretty crazy.
That must have been, you know, the sense of what possibly could happen that you weren't prepared for or nobody was prepared for. It must have been a cool sense during the show.
Yeah.
It had to have been cool.
Well, then, yeah, it's like I said, I know I'm jumping all over. My brain's still scrambled from the experience. But, and this, yeah, it was apparently the second supergroup that I was surprised because I knew Steven Tyler was probably going to be there. But everybody's talked about how his vocals are blown out. He can't sing anymore. And that's why Aerosmith canceled everything. And he came out, and then Ronnie Wood comes out. And I was like, what? You know? And they ended up doing Train Kept a Rollin'. And he didn't skip a beat. You would think it was like 70s Aerosmith. I was like, that's amazing.
He sounded
great.
Really,
and then they did
really
Walk This
great.
Way, and then they busted into Whole Lot of Love, and he nailed it better than Plant could for sure right now. And I'm like, okay, Steven Tyler's still able to pull a little out. You know, that was impressive.
Now, maybe not full tours.
Yeah, he might not be able to do full tours.
I don't know how he'd do on a full, you know, 2 hour, 2.5 hour show, but for those three songs, incredible. Absolutely amazing.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And that was the first time I've ever seen him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've never seen Aerosmith.
We should mention that, I guess, the demand for tickets was so overwhelming that, I guess, Sharon and some others decided, you know, we got to get someone in here to live stream this thing across the world to all these people who want to watch it. So it was cool that that was available, that they, you know, went that extra step to do that for people. So.
Yeah,
and it was cool, actually, that Tool, because everybody thought, because Tool's not on the bill anymore because they won't live stream and because they got left off of one of the promo things. And no, I mean, they were not only there, they actually were really great, and they did the whole live stream thing. Nobody, you know, and then, of course, Tool fans are freaking out about that. It's the only time Tool's perfect. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, settle down.
I thoroughly enjoyed Tool.
They can't settle down.
Yeah. Tool is a band that I've been sort of, you know, casually into, not like some of the real hardcore fans, off and on for 20-some years, and we've never seen them either, because even when we maybe attempted to get tickets, they were impossible to get as well in and of themselves.
So lucky
that we got this avenue to be able to catch a three-song set by them. But it was really incredible. One thing you didn't talk about, and I'm just kind of looking for the order of operations, I will say one of the first super exciting things for me was after we'd already gone through Changes and the first supergroup, when the second supergroup kicked off, that's when there was the drum off with Chad Smith and Travis Barker and Dana Carey.
Or Dana Carey, yeah.
And it was it was amazing. Well, one, seeing all three of them out there together, varying levels of concentration and just into the bits and just also the joy that they all were exuding at the same time. That was really neat. And then throughout that set of the supergroups, I think what they took turns coming back out to be the drummers for each of those little subsets of the supergroup bits. So that was really cool.
That's
really cool. Yeah, I love that idea. Get the drummers together while we got them all here and let them play. That's really right. Cool. So after, Brittany, what you're talking about, the emotion and the, you know, the energy that was in the crowd, the question I'm about to ask is going to sound really bad academically. did you get the sense while you were listening to it that so much of the bands that were playing got their inspiration and their, you know, basic riff style from Black Sabbath? Like,
I guarantee every single one of them, there was honored to be present in the presence yeah. of the people who, in many, many, many of the cases, the people who influenced them to even get into music in the first place, yeah, let alone specific playing style. Right.
Most, if not all, said if it wasn't for Black Sabbath, they wouldn't even exist.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Oh, wow. How
Metallica
cool is that?
Especially. That's amazing. James Hetfield, I guess I think it was at the end of the set, but he'd said something along the lines of, "Thank you for giving us a purpose in life. Thank you, Black Sabbath."
Wow, that's amazing.
So that kind of sentiment was present throughout all of the groups, and you know, there were a few individual artists, you know, some of the older people joining that. Okay, maybe they were already in music before Black Sabbath existed, or they were coming up together. But you know, there was a level of mutual respect and probably that sense of pushing each other or challenging each other in whether it had that bit of a competitive, oh, well, we're not as hard as you because we're cool in a different way. And, you know, whatever those things are, it still was, I think to me, there's not a soul who was there that didn't just want to be there.
That's pretty amazing. It really is. And similar to you, Hans, I had not actively listened to Sabbath more than a couple tracks that I might come across organically, you know, in a long time. But it definitely was the root of my, you know, when I discovered Sabbath after being a Kiss fan, I was like, oh, now I understand where yeah. they got this from, you know. But to just think about, and Metallica is a great example, how many people, you know, couldn't have had a platform to start if it wasn't for what Black Sabbath did is pretty amazing. Were there other acts that stood out to you particularly, either good or bad?
I wouldn't say any was bad.
None were bad.
And part of it was because the things that people might have complained about, we recognized the technical difficulties that were happening, so I didn't really think it was bad. It was just unfortunate glitch.
I think there might have been. Okay. I don't know how many of those came through on the live stream. I know there's been a little bit of hullabaloo, people discussing if there were audio edits before the stream went out. And I think there might have been some, but I wouldn't worry about it, honestly, because none of that was going to take away from the feeling of the show or the authenticity of the performance. On a technical side, we know there were a few acts that, from our perception as musicians, but being there in the flesh, we could tell there was maybe some timing challenges, somebody getting ahead of the beat.
Yep.
Who was the first one?
Had an issue.
Was David Draiman a little
had a bit of an issue too, where he was just a little ahead of the song, and everyone's just like, he doesn't know the song. I'm like, no, he's nailing singing the song. I can tell he knows it.
There's a monitor issue or something.
But there was definitely something with the monitor. He was getting the feed off time. It happened to Axl Rose on one song, and at the beginning, and Axl even said, he's just like, he kind of laughed. He's like, I'm sorry. He's like, I did this wrong. You can't hear me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he realized that there was a problem with it. And even I think they did Never Say Die, and he was a little ahead of that too, but it still sounded great. And Slash was laughing at him. I don't think anybody
else saw
that. But
it looked lighthearted. It didn't look like they were pissed off.
But they were having a blast with it. It was,
yeah,
that was just some technical stuff.
Well, that's the way to handle it. Yes. Yeah. Especially with that many acts happening on one day with all that equipment. I was going to ask how Guns N' Roses were.
I thought they were great. I love, you know, it's just like, you either like Axl or you don't. You know, that his voice, he's got a hell of a range, and it can be really annoying if you don't like him. You know, it's just, that's what it is. But for being, what is he, like 62 or 63? I mean, he still rips, man. Yeah, there's no, and they did like 4 Sabbath songs out of the gate, and then just finished with 2 major Gun songs.
Sweet.
You know, it's like, they were not screwing around.
What else you need?
Yeah, they nailed it.
I've seen a lot of Axl hate a bit of Guns N' Roses in general hate, but mostly Axl hate online. And I'm just thinking, that's unfounded. They're just people who are never going to be fans of that band. But you know what?
Yeah.
Ozzy was thrilled that they were there. You know, we've
I'm sure. Yeah.
Know, the way he interacted with other artists, you know, after and before, and said kind words about everybody. I think Ozzy's, we all know he's a pretty genuine guy who's not going to hold back if he thinks something's a bunch of shit. And he was just honored to have, you know, those guys there and with, and so I think that a lot of the hate comes from some past rivalries that may have existed.
Yeah.
And well, and I agree with you that his voice, it can be, yeah, there's a certain timbre to his voice that's not for everybody, but I thought that for who he is and what he has always been as a musician, and Slash was on point, of course, I think that it was perfectly appropriate, and I think they were great.
And you know, speaking of rivalries, I saw some behind the scenes, like backstage photos of Axl and James Hetfield hanging out and talking. And I was just like, man, that fence may have been mended after all those years.
Yeah, burying the hatchet. That's something. Wow, that's very cool.
Which, that's a good segue to Metallica. Oh,
we don't know what the conversation was, but
I had never seen Metallica, and I wasn't sure if I really wanted to.
Right?
Yeah, I wasn't even sure if I wanted to. And like this new tour they've been doing the last year or two, it's a cool idea, but man, like, do I have to go to two nights? Because they're, you know, a different set both nights. I'm like, I'm just trying to see them once, but now that I've seen this, I'm like, well, shoot, I might want to go see this. They were really, really good.
Well, I thought I'd never say that because I was never especially into Metallica, but part of that was a really dumb situation. When I was in my high school band, we were really big into like Pink Floyd and some other artists and stuff at that time, and the lead guy in this band, this friend of mine, bought a vinyl picture record that had the images of the masks from the live Is There Anybody Out There of the Wall, and he was just gonna we were just gonna play it once and frame it and put it up on the wall in our band rehearsal space there. and so he'd bought this record off eBay, and it looked amazing. It was so cool. We were stoked, and we put it on the record player and, you know, dropped the needle and just, you know, waiting for that opening bit to come in, and we start hearing that whoever made it just totally, you know, printed this Pink Floyd image onto a Metallica record. And so I've had an unfounded hatred of Metallica ever since, because I was, you know,
I mean, it's understandable.
Formative years. Obviously, it's their fault. Right. What assholes.
Metallica stole your Floyds.
And I know that's irrelevant, but like, it's honestly like my whole life I've just been like, I don't really care about Metallica. I'm not interested. And the past few years I've been kind of, you know, lowering those fences a bit and really kind of maybe appreciating them more for who they really are. Cause obviously they had nothing to do with that at all. But you know, it was a traumatic event for me, and they were the soundtrack to it. So,
you've been scarred. Yes.
So I was actually really thrilled to catch that Metallica set. I thought they were incredible. They were, and I can't think of a better band to have been the lead off. That was the on ramp after Metallica. That it was game on. Ozzy was next, and we all knew it.
Now I'll say this. I saw the first, I think it was the first Ozfest reunion of Sabbath, and I think that was 2000 maybe or something like that. I was assigned when I was writing as a journalist to go see it. And I remember thinking, this is great. You know, Ozzy's wrapped up his career. This is excellent, you know. And that was 25 years ago. So what was the sense? I mean, we all saw the images of him rising up on a, I guess he was sitting in some sort of a throne or a big chair type thing.
I mean, it was, for not to sound too cheesy, I think it was just awe-inspiring. Just, you were just struck with like, holy moly, this, you know, like,
because
we
know really happening,
you know, he was in such bad physical shape, yet was somehow commanding such, you know, a respect just rising up like that. It was insane, you know, that he could still do
amazing.
That with that kind of, just knowing how frail he was, you wouldn't know. I mean, and he still sounded
everything else
amazing.
That he could do was absolutely into with every bit of passion that you would want to hear or hope to hear coming from him.
Wow.
And honestly, I didn't think that's incredible. People were talking like he's not going to be able to perform at all. He might do one song, or he might like come out and sing a little, you know, a song with Sabbath, and that's it. And
yeah,
I mean, he did five songs straight with like just crazy amount of energy. I was so amazed.
That's amazing.
And then a short break for the set change.
Yeah.
And then four more songs right after that.
That's amazing, and you know, it looks like he was running on just adrenaline like endorphins that were pumping through his body. I mean, it was pretty amazing. You could even on the video, you could say, "Wow, this is amazing."
Yeah, it was incredible, and I've seen some little headlines pop up and little snippets of news that he had chosen not to be taking some of his other medications leading up to the show, because they would drain him of energy, and he wanted to make sure that he could muster up any ounce that he could and not not have any risk of, you know, just not, you know, just being present and being fully lucid and fully just like ready to rock and roll. But I think that meant he was probably in considerably more pain than we would have ever known, because he just barreled through like the rock star that he is.
Got to be up there with one of the greatest rock and roll performances of all time, right?
Absolutely.
To do that.
Unforgettable.
Yeah. Did you have any sense of anything unusual when you saw him that, you know, did it ever cross your mind that, you know, that maybe this is the last time Ozzy is going to play? And, you know, not to seem morbid in any way,
I didn't know that he was
going to
die in less than 3 weeks, but it was 100% certain that that was it. You could just tell.
Really? Okay.
And it was both very just inspiring and depressing, because as somebody who grew up with that music, you kind of realize all of a sudden it's just like, shit, I'm old. You know, it was not, you know, the whole time, you know, you're able to pretend when you listen to this old music and every year it's like, yeah, you know, but it's just like, no, man, this is it. It's like all of a sudden I caught up to myself, and it's just like, oh, it's so sad, because I mean, you just knew it. And actually, you know, with recent things, Hulk Hogan and all that, some of my friends were texting me. It's like, oh man, this is horrible that this is all happening. I said, all the people who were adults when we were kids are old as hell. It's not a surprise. You know, it's really not a surprise. You shouldn't be shocked. Right. It's sad, sure, but we shouldn't be shocked.
It is.
Yeah. I think that I was pretty sure that leading into the show, it had already been pretty well announced and portrayed that it would be the final performance.
Yeah.
But I think that because he still sounded so powerful, I think that some people started to maybe have this, I mean, I would call it false hope even back the day of the show, but well maybe he'll make one more appearance, just like pop up somewhere. I'm thinking, when? When? Because this was the time. And it was incredible. Again, no idea that the end was so imminent. He was so powerful and commanding on stage with his voice and his presence. Incredible.
Yeah, and as sad as it may be to be able to perform at such an event and essentially attend your own funeral, that was pretty darn cool, really.
That is cool. That is like the best rock and roll movie.
It's easy to think about it that way now. That was
it really is. And you know what I found fascinating? Even before the news about Ozzy broke, this concert was taken on a life of its own. Like, I was looking at it maybe about, I don't know, a week and a half afterwards, and there was already a Wikipedia page with, like, I don't know, 40 or 50 paragraphs, right, with descriptions and links to like every song and every performance. And it's kind of incredible. It became legendary, like, as you know, as soon as the lights went up at the end of it, which is kind of incredible. And to do it all so close to where Ozzy started out, you know, in this grim Midlands working class town in England, is just amazing too. Yeah. They didn't have it in London. They didn't have it in Manchester or anything like that.
Yeah, they could have done it in any. They could have done it in any massive city in the world.
Yeah.
And it was so much more special and incredible that it was local, that it was for charity. The amount of money raised from this event, and I don't know if the ticker is still rolling for merchandise sales and stuff like that. And last I'd seen a figure was somewhere around 140 million pounds, which converts to 190 ish million USD.
Yeah.
And so if it's going up from there, and as far as I'm aware, every penny
charity event.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, every penny of that is going to somehow split or combo between specifically Parkinson's research, but also local Birmingham hospitals, which is amazing. I can't imagine the benefits that city is going to see and reap from this for years to come. I hope, because it was a marvelous place to be, and I hope that it's a really good benefit for them. They're really proud of him. I think I even saw a tidbit of them renaming the airport after him, perhaps. I don't know if that'll go through, but that was a possibility of one way to, one way to just have another little ceremonial.
Flying high again at Birmingham Airport. Yeah, and then completely overshadowing the fact that Jeff Lynne's ELO played July 4th and 5th, also in Birmingham. That's the same
time. Oh, no, did they really? Oh, my gosh, I didn't even know that.
I looked,
oh, man.
When I realized that, I'm like, maybe we can go see ELO, you know, on the 4th, you know, and the tickets were sold out and too expensive. I'm like, all right, we've seen ELO. So
we got to see the UB40 act instead.
We saw the UB40. Yeah,
well, yeah. I mean, instead, yeah, which, probably a lot cheaper, too.
Yeah.
Well, after our bar tab, maybe not.
Maybe not. That's right. I've been there.
One thing I want to say about the show, because we hadn't talked about it yet, because, again, since I haven't seen the live stream, I don't know how the live stream portrayed or showed what was going on between bands, between acts. But they were on a rotating stage. So there was a backdrop that as soon as one band was done, it could raise up. The stage could just 180 swivel. Yep. So then in that opportunity in between, we had, it was only like 10 or 15 minutes between each act. And maybe 20 on the long side. So that's pretty quick for any sort of festival event that you're at. And so then in between, they were just playing other music over the PA speakers, or they would have little snippets of Ozzy being, you know, deep faked inserted into various other pop culture scenes. Yeah, whether it was movie clips or other videos. And some of those I think had been circulating online a bit. I knew when I was talking about it, some people were already familiar with some of the clips. But then there were also video heartfelt messages from other celebrities that weren't in attendance or weren't performing. And I'm not going to remember all of them offhand, but we got to see, you know, video pop-up messages from all of Judas Priest together, from Dolly Parton, from Elton John, from people all over, whether they were within the metal community or outside the metal community, just expressing their heartfelt love and appreciation for everything that Ozzy did for music as a whole. And that was, I think, really special as well. So I don't know if those were aired, but we got a kick out of seeing a lot of that as well. And it was a good way to really help to shorten and tighten up that time in between. So we could just pop out, get another pint, come back and, you know, catch those messages. And the next band was ready to play before you knew it.
That's amazing. Yeah you got to love that. Yeah. Did you get the sense that there were people that showed up there without tickets just to be there? Just to be around the arena or in the town.
There was people who actually, we met two people
on the ferry
who did not get tickets to the show. And the guy was just a huge Ozzy fan, and his girlfriend was just along for the ride, and they were just hanging out. They were just planning on just being outside the venue. And
that is so cool.
I did hear of one person who was out there, and this people were there, and they're just like, our friend got really sick, and there was a younger kid or whatever, and he didn't have tickets, and this guy, our friend, couldn't go. We've got an extra ticket. How about you come in with us? And they brought this kid in.
Oh my gosh!
And he was
really?
So excited.
Wow.
My understanding that he's a local kid who lives just like up the street from the venue, who I think had special needs. If it's the same story that I remember.
Yeah.
So, and it was a group of like four or five. Young American blokes that you know, take this little kid under their wing and just have a ball with him, treating him like he's their he's their best mate for the whole day. I'm sure he had an incredible time.
But yeah, there was definitely a whole lawn area outside the venue that there were just people just camped out there. And so yeah, I'm sure besides the 45,000 inside, there was probably another couple thousand outside.
That many, you think?
I mean, there was quite a few. Okay. Yeah.
That's amazing.
The pubs of Birmingham had an incredible weekend as well. They must have. Well, I, for one, will put into a suggestion, if anyone's listening from the organizers of this show, some of that charity money, every newborn baby at Birmingham Hospital, copy of Master Reality.
There you go.
That's what you get when you're born.
Yeah.
Start them off right. Guys, this has been fantastic. Is there anything else you want to add or toss in that you haven't? You've painted a vivid picture. It just seems like such an amazing trip.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. We didn't really talk about it. I'm sure somebody has. I was going to say nobody's talked about it, but we haven't talked about, really Aussies or Black Sabbath's performance that much. But I mean, I think the things that shocked me the most, for whatever reason, like some of Ozzy's choices, I mean, in five songs, playing Suicide Solution surprised me. Yep. But I mean, it went really well. It sounded great. And then, Mama, I'm Coming Home, again, not a dry eye in the house.
Waterworks.
I would imagine. I don't even think he hardly was getting through it. I mean, he was choking up a little bit singing it.
Yeah.
And then, Sabbath gets out there, they open with War Pigs, and we're fun.
We closed Suburbs Fest with War Pigs last year.
Yeah, so I was like, I couldn't believe it. You just start hearing those sirens go off, and I'm just like, oh,
no.
This is epic.
Oh, wow.
It was so just thick and dark, and I was just like, this is crazy. And then they ended with Paranoid, and they gave Ozzy a cake. What are you going to do? It was kind of a weird feeling, though, at the end, because, I mean, the curfew, it cut thing off, like, kind of abrupt. There was talk that, I heard Tony Iommi say that they had even two or three more songs they rehearsed, but the way the curfew went, it's like, you can't really go beyond that, they're pretty strict. And so, they just had, they kind of went, they got Ozzy this cake, they all, said thank you, and fireworks went off, and it was just it was like, wow, after 10 hours, it was just kind of a weird ending.
A bit surreal to walk out of there.
Yeah, you expected this just like, it still was huge pomp and circumstance with fireworks and everything, but it's just like, oh man, it's really over now. I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a weird vibe, but it was a good vibe. But.
And to turn around after it was over and I'm looking around at the crowd and I kind of mentioned this already, but to be seriously surrounded by 40,000 metalhead, mostly big dudes, just bawling was something else, but in a really endearing and incredible special way.
Ozzy, he's the beating heart of metal, no matter what happens.
Absolutely.
From here on out. So that's incredible. How did you guys feel? Last question. How did you feel on Monday morning at work?
We actually did go to work, believe it or not, on Monday morning.
It was rough. Sunday. Thankfully, Sunday, even though traveling in and of itself is kind of exhausting, we traveled in a way that we were responsible for as little as possible. So, planes are uncomfortable. We couldn't really sleep, but at least we were just able to kind of decompress a little bit. And then when we flew back, so we landed in at O'Hare, and then we took another couple of trains out of the city back to where we had parked. So we only had to drive another hour and a half by the end of the night and still got home, midnight, one?
Yeah, not that late.
On a late Sunday night, early Monday morning, which is shockingly not that different from when we would normally be up. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah. Tired, sure, but it could have been, and thankfully it wasn't worse.
Yes. It was kind of a surreal thing to be going to work Monday morning and be just like, wow, do we just do that? Because we're already back at work.
Saturday night, I was.
I really loved the conversations that we had with people when we come back on, the 6th. This is, right after the holiday, and everybody's saying, "Oh, what did you do for the 4th?" And I'm just like, "Oh, yeah, went to a concert." "Oh, yeah, that's no surprise. Who'd you see?" "Yeah, it was a bunch of metal bands." "Oh, cool. Where at?" "Birmingham." And then just like watching their mental wheels turn and figure out what I was really talking about. At work, we had a big Teams chat where everybody was just posting photos of what they were doing prior to the 4th. And then a few people chimed in afterwards. And I just sent the I didn't say anything explicit about what we did. I just said, I don't think anybody traveled more than Hans and I. And then I posted a photo of he and I at the venue with the screens and the stage behind us. And I know which coworkers immediately were like, oh my gosh, you did what? You were there?
And so far, we're the only people I know who've actually gone. So,
A few people I know have expressed their low-key jealousy, to which I said, you can be high-key jealous. That's fine.
Yeah. I will express my high-key jealousy right now on the podcast, for sure. Yeah.
So in summary, the entire trip from Thursday morning till Sunday night / wee hours of Monday morning, we were in a total of 4 countries. We took 3 planes, 9 trains, an international ferry, a couple of shuttles, a tram, and a taxi to get there and back.
Hugh John Candy and Steve Martin.
Yeah, it was an adventure. It took us 27 hours to get there.
Yeah, it was a little longer than anticipated.
Wow. Wow. What an amazing trip. That's rock and roll. You guys are the most rock and roll people.
Let us be an inspiration. Buy the tickets. Do something dumb. Enjoy your life.
And now it's going to seem like such a letdown because Suburbs Fest is going to go way above all those expectations that you had, of course.
Suburbs Fest is its own kind of incredible experience, though. So it's a different experience, and I'm every bit looking forward to it.
Can't wait.
Well, what a rock and roll memory. I think there's a lesson for all us listeners in this, and you heard Hans mention it at the beginning. If you can get the tickets, maybe you want to go ahead and go.
Let's go.
Well, Hans and Brittany, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about this story and sharing it with all our listeners. I know they're really going to love it, but thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank
anytime.
You.
All right. Well, folks, as you may have heard earlier this week, we may have mentioned it, or maybe this is the first time you're hearing it. We are going to take the week after Suburbs Fest off this year with a little decompression time for everybody involved. So if you're at Suburbs Fest, you're going to know that you need that time. But we are going to post some episodes from the past, and hopefully you will enjoy those until we get back with episodes from Suburbs Fest. So with that, I want to thank once again Hans and Brittany very much from Frank Muffin. Find their music on Bandcamp and other places. You want to listen to it, believe me. And follow their lifestyle because they know what they're doing. So they are rock and roll warriors. Thanks you guys very much, and we will talk to you later.
He'd bought this record off eBay and it looked amazing. It was so cool. We were stoked. And we put it on the record player and, you know, dropped the needle and just, you know, waiting for that opening bit to come in. And we start hearing da 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 da.